When you need the independence to speak your mind, you take it on the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5 FM.
Good morning and welcome to It Does Not Define Me. Conversations with our female warriors. They are breast cancer warriors on Freedom 106.5. This is a campaign to raise awareness for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And what we have chosen to do is feature a number of brave young women who are not afraid to tell their story. They're not afraid to tell the messy parts of their story, but also what we can all learn from them is there truly is light at the end of the tunnel. There is a pot of gold at the end of every single rainbow. Crystal Chevalier joins us right now on set, and I want to welcome her. I want to thank her first before we even start, because she is a 32-year-old mother of two. And at the age of 30, when most young women are ready to start another chapter in their life, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. She's now rebuilding the pieces of her life or putting it back in a new order. And when I say that, we're going to understand a little more about what we mean during this conversation. Hello, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Crystal, you have not been fully declared cancer-free as yet.
No, so at present, I'm waiting for the results of a CT scan that I recently did. And I'm hopeful. So check on me again in a few months.
What has this journey been like for you? Because I know I could say, what is the waiting like? But a lot of this is a lot of waiting with you.
It's been surprising. There have been unexpected situations around every corner from the day of my discovery. However, I feel as though it's been a learning process, and I am not afraid to see what's next.
Was there a history of breast cancer in your family?
I had one maternal aunt who died of breast cancer in her 30s. Apart from that, no history.
You discovered a lump in your breast.
Correct.
Is self-examination a regular part of your routine? Because a lot of women don't do it still.
Right. So although I didn't have a strong family history, I took it upon myself to do a self-examination every few months. So it's not something I did every week, every month, but it's something I reminded myself to do at least two or three times a year. And it doesn't have to be anything extreme. You don't need to have a medical background to do it. You examine yourself and you feel for anything that's strange or that doesn't feel as though it's part of your usual presentation in your body.
How did you discover that lump? Do you remember that day?
Yeah, clearly. I was in the shower. And I just thought to myself very randomly, when was the last time you checked? And that's what I did. I started from my neck and I started to feel for anything strange. I felt under my arms and then I felt my breast area and I discovered a lump in my left breast.
Did you at any point think that this could be cancerous?
When I first felt it, the first thought that came into my head was like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't have cancer. I think we have a tendency sometimes to jump to the worst expectation and then we have to kind of settle ourselves down and ask, is it really likely? So the first thing I thought was, the first feeling I felt was a bit of fear that it could be cancer. And then I convinced myself that it was unlikely, but it was still concern. And I still needed to have it checked. So I didn't want to alarm anyone. So I only told my husband about it at that time. And other than that, I kept it very private.
What was his reaction? Did you see?
He was very calming. He told me he understood my concern, but he didn't share the same level of concern that I had at that time. And he really kept me grounded at that point. And he just asked me, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, I'm definitely going to have some sort of consultation with a doctor. And that's what I did.
Tell me about the doctor visit. Did you go by yourself?
I went by myself. I went to most of my appointments at that time by myself. It was also during the COVID-19 pandemic. So there were a lot of restrictions. And women who experienced cancer during that period would know that it was a very lonely experience because of the restrictions. So I went by myself. My doctor, he also was not very concerned. He said I did not have a strong family history and I was very young. He said I wasn't in my 40s. So at that time, it was expected that I didn't start mammograms and so forth. But I told him it was definitely present and something to be checked. And
so you insisted on checking it?
He would have, I believe he would have anyway, but yes, I was quite assertive. I believe pleasant, but assertive. And yeah, he did an examination and he said what he felt warranted an ultrasound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell me about the ultrasound. And at that time when he said what I feel, you should do an ultrasound. Did you become a little more alarmed at that point?
No, at that point, if anything, it was reassuring to know that it was going to be treated with. I think I would have felt worse if he said, okay, monitor it and come back in a few months if it doesn't go away, or if we tried antibiotics or something like that first. So the fact that we took this step to have that ultrasound done, I felt a bit better leaving the office at that time.
So you go to get the ultrasound. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that and the journey after that.
Right. So when I went for the ultrasound, she looked at the right breast first and she said she wasn't seeing anything alarming. And then she looked at the left breast and she said, So I asked her, doesn't it look like the right breast? And she said, well, I see what you were referring to. And I believe that I'll provide you with a report suggesting further inquiries into the lump, right? When I took back that ultrasound to the doctor, I believe it stated that I should do a mammogram. I'm not sure, but I believe that is what it said at that time. And he told me rather than do another scan, he felt as though we should proceed to removing it and doing a biopsy.
Okay.
Yeah, he said he felt as though he had enough information to require that.
Did you understand what that meant?
Yeah, I asked a lot of questions, and it's something I would encourage everyone to do. Go prepared with questions, and if you don't have questions prepared, when the information is provided to you, if you're uncertain, ask. Or if something comes into your mind, don't feel as though you don't have a right to ask and you should just listen to the doctor. You have to advocate for yourself. So I asked any questions I had, and I was provided with the information, so I understood what was happening next.
So you go for the biopsy. Tell me about that and the wait for the results.
The day of my biopsy was probably the loneliest day of my entire life. I got there to the hospital, and my surgery was supposed to be, I think, sometime after 9 a.m., if I'm not mistaken. But there was an emergency situation. So I had my surgery in the late evening period, and I was just there alone for the entire day, just waiting and not knowing when I would be going in for the surgery. There's always a fear with surgery because I'm not sure if you have experienced it, but when they take you in and they tell you, okay, start counting backwards, you literally have no control over anything after that point.
Right.
And you wake up not knowing what happened to you during that period when you were unconscious. So just the thought of it was very alarming to someone like me who likes to plan and feel control over my circumstances. So it was just a very difficult day. I remember it had a gentleman next to me, and he was very, I don't know if he was afraid, but he was very loud and sounding very scared, and he had a friend with him, and a very elderly man, and he had an elderly friend with him, and they sound like if they were friends for their entire life. And he was only crawling with him. Behave yourself, you're too miserable. That's why I have to be here with you. Get a wife, you know. And it was so cute to me. They kept me entertained.
You get the biopsy. Tell me about the waiting for the results and when you got that result.
I went privately for the biopsy. So it wasn't a very long wait. I think I had to wait maybe 2 weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks. And during that time...
Wait, what were you thinking during that time?
Yeah,
did you at any point think, I may have cancer?
Yeah, I did. Because Google is not a doctor and is not the answer to anything. I would never advise anybody to follow instructions from Google. But I read a lot and I research a lot. So I started to ask questions relative to the lump that I felt. So my lump was very large. It was very hard. It was defined. and it had no pain. Mm-hmm. I felt no pain in my breast. And within the space of just a few months, while I had to feel it to know it was there initially, you could actually see it bulging. It started to come out. So I did believe that I had cancer at that time.
Did you express that fear to anyone in your family?
My husband only. And I told him I was convinced I had cancer, and I sort of steeled my mind to receive that news.
Tell me about the day you received the news.
That was the one appointment that I was accompanied. My husband went with me, and I had to remove the stitches from the biopsy that we did. And after that, we went into the office, and the doctor said, you know, it's always terrible to tell somebody what I need to say to you, especially knowing that you're a young woman like this, and it was probably very unexpected, but you do have cancer. And I remember my husband holding onto my hand very tightly, and he started to become teary-eyed. And I looked at him and I said, I just whispered, behave yourself, calm down. And the doctor told me he would give me a few days, and he wanted me to compile any questions I had and to return to him so that we could discuss what would be the next steps. And I told him I didn't need any time to think of my questions. I had my questions, and they were flowing in my mind.
Did you have a conversation with your children at any point? Because you have two young children.
I do. So I did not at that point give them too much information. However, my younger sister, she talks very openly, meaning too much. And one day I was combing my daughter's hair, and she said, Crystal, when is your surgery again? And my daughter heard it, and she looked at me, she said, you're doing surgery. And so I had to tell her at that point. I didn't want to lie to her, so I told her that I found a lump and I was just going to check to see what it was. And she shouldn't worry. And I told her, in most cases with women my age and family history and so forth, it is not cancer. And she said that doesn't erase the fact that in some cases it is cancer.
How old was she at that time?
She was nine. Okay. She was nine at that time. Yeah. So
let's move to the point that you know it is cancer. You're at the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. You have all the questions. After you and your husband process what is being said to you, you had to go home. Did you tell your daughters immediately, or how did you break the news to the rest of your family?
Right. So first we went for doubles.
Nothing ever doubles castle, but I get you.
Yeah, so I insisted I went to the doubles first. So we went for doubles. And then my girls were at my mom's house, because I'm very close with my mother. And they were there. So when I arrived, my mom was actually leaving. My mom and my stepfather was leaving. And she was like, everything good? Because she too was assuming that it would be positive news. And I was like, when you come back? Right? And I went inside and I waited for her to come back, because I didn't want to see it in different places. I have two sisters I'm very close with, and they were there as well. And my brother-in-law, who I'm very close with. So when they came back, I went into the room with my mom and my stepfather, and I told them. And then I called my sisters and my brother-in-law
what
together.
What did you say to them?
So I told them, you all know I went to get the results of the biopsy. And unfortunately, the doctor said it is cancer. My younger sister started to cry immediately. And I was like, no. I said, don't do that. I said, I'm not crying. I don't want you to be crying. And she just kind of pulled it in. You know, and then after that, I was like, right, what are we doing? Now we do something today. You know, let's have a good time today. And I think my other sister probably wasn't too pleased with it. But what I was explaining is that that day I felt good.
Yeah.
And I knew the road that was going to be ahead of me. I knew it had days that I wouldn't be able to move from my bed unless someone was lifting me. That's the expectation I had in my head. Right. So on that day, I felt good. I wanted to spend time with my family.
Did you tell your daughters on that day?
I didn't.
When did you tell them?
I think it was a few days later. I can't recall exactly. I think it was a few days later. I think I needed to process a little. And I sat the both of them down, my husband and I sat the both of them down. And we told them, the elder one at that time, nine, she had questions. But she said she expected it. The little one didn't understand too much. She was just three at the time. Yeah, so she didn't really understand.
What stage cancer were you diagnosed with?
Stage 2 at that time. But by the time I was diagnosed in October 2021 at stage 2, and then in November, they removed lymph nodes and so forth to do further testing. And at that point, it was stage 3C.
So it was described as an aggressive?
Yeah.
Well, Crystal, we're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We're going to talk about her life, her family, and how different members supported her through this journey and her journey of acceptance. She did have a big cheer squad behind her. You're going to see on our picture wall the balloons and the celebrations, but how she kept her faith during all of this. Welcome back. It does not define me. Breast cancer warriors. We're continuing our conversation with Crystal. She's gotten her diagnosis. She has two young daughters. At the age of 30, when most women are planning the next party or the next gathering at their home, she's preparing for a journey that she also understood at that time would be one that she has never faced before. Crystal, you talk about by the time you come around with your second set of tests, the cancer had gone from stage 2 to stage 3. So we know things were moving quickly. So there is the chemo, the surgery, and the radiation. I see that you decided to do T-shirts and you decided to put balloons in your house. Tell me about the process, the thinking. Who was there cheering you on?
All right, so the balloons were done actually for a celebration we had. We always celebrate birthdays in a big way at my mom's house. So we do decorations and we have a nice time. I was ill, but I insisted that we continue that practice. The jerseys, I decided for every chemo session, I was going to print a jersey with something motivating or inspirational, not just for me, but for whoever read it. Because when you go into the treatment center, there are several people there who have their own emotions to deal with. And it was also something I could control. So I didn't know how my body would react every chemo session. But I know that I was going in there with a printed jersey, a smile on my face, and sometimes some needles to stress out the nurses when they're taking my blood pressure. But I felt the need to do that. So for every session, I printed my jerseys.
Tell me about the acceptance and how you reacted to the chemo, because everyone, it's a different journey.
Yeah.
When you went in, because you obviously were mentally prepared for this. You said you knew that you had cancer before a doctor told you.
Yeah.
What was your first experience with chemotherapy?
Chemotherapy is as bad as everyone says it is. So if you ever watch a movie or you ever heard someone speak about cancer and mention chemo and you wonder if they're exaggerating, they are not. That was my experience with chemo. Regardless of how strong my mind was, my body was not that strong. And that was even more frustrating because sometimes you have the will to do certain things. And I think about children who are battling cancer and their urge to play or to have a normal childhood. And I felt like that. I felt as though I was a strong, youthful woman in my mind. But then the chemo did something completely different to my body. And further to that, eventually it affected my mind as well because everything became a blur. I wouldn't be sure what day it was. And it was overwhelming.
Did those around you realize that you were, there's obviously something else happening with you, not just your body?
I think everyone just knew I was sick and that was the extent of it. They would just think, okay, well, Crystal is sick. And I had so much help. We had to leave our home. We have our own house and we left there and we started to stay with my mom because our house is in Sandy Grande. She lives Trin City and where I had to go to get my treatment. It was closer to get there from her home and then I had additional support to watch my girls, take them to school because their life didn't stop when I was doing treatment. And I had a lot of support, but to be honest, I can't even provide you with a lot of details to say specifically what happened during chemo. I recall sometimes dragging myself out of bed because Serenity, my elder daughter, had work to do. I remember she had a project that was due, and the only place I could find comfort was on the coal tile. And so I lay on the coal tile with her, and we did her project there on the floor. and we got it done.
You shared with me earlier that some of the medication, you was having a real adverse reaction. You were having an adverse reaction. How did you realize that? What started happening?
All right, so with the chemo, the first set of chemo that I did had the side effects you would usually see with the nausea, vomiting, several regular side effects. The second set of chemo that I did had the reaction of pain in my bones. So I couldn't move, I would be screaming out, and I had to be lifted to be moved. There was a conversation with the doctor, and he suggested maybe I should stop working and things like that. But interestingly enough, the medication I was speaking to you about is the medication I took after chemo. Mm-hmm. The tablets that I take from home, they started to have, because those medications are for hormones, it put me in menopause to start, because my cancer spreads on estrogen, right? Mm-hmm. It feeds on estrogen. So they put me in menopause. So
at 30 years old,
yeah,
you felt the onset of menopause. Mentally, you're battling cancer. You now have to face the reality that as a 30-year-old woman, you're now in menopause.
Yeah. So the hot flashes are not nice. I can't have any more children. Well, based on the information from my doctors. But my mental health is what was really affected at a point, and it's not something I spoke about openly, but it became very dark. And so I became non-compliant with my medication, and most of my family would not know that. I don't think anybody really knew that. I stopped
taking the medication?
Because of the side effects that they were having at that time.
And what
that
were the side effects? Like, you talk about it. Describe it to me. You describe it as a dark place. What was it?
It was a feeling as though I did not want to come out of bed. It was as though my self-esteem was dirt low. I didn't see the value in almost anything anymore. I had to push myself. I had to find coping mechanisms, because I knew it was depression. Mm-hmm. What I expected at that time to be just menopause, based on what I read, mm-hmm. and what they spoke about, I had a reaction that was a bit more intense because of the hormonal impact, mm-hmm. of the medication, right? So it started to feel like depression. It got to a very terrible place that I wouldn't say on air. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had to tell my doctor about it. And I asked him to change the medication. And unfortunately, they could not change the medication because of my need for it. So they referred me to psychiatry and to social work.
Did your family know about the battle you were facing at that time?
No.
Were you afraid?
I wasn't afraid. I think because I am in the field of social work, I expected all that would be said to me. Mm-hmm. I knew what I had to do. I knew what the coping mechanisms should be. And I was practicing them. But I just wanted the medication to change so I wouldn't have to deal with it.
Right.
You know, so when I heard that
They couldn't change your medication,
I just sort of said, okay, well, straighten up yourself and shake it off and cope with it. And that's what I did. I coped with it.
Not many people would find that strength. What was it in you that said, because you became non-compliant because you were fearful of the police, that in your mind the medication was taking you, but you understood you needed the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also understood that I need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people can do the two at the same time. Where do you think you got your strength from, or what do you think was a driving force?
I have two girls. I have two girls, and I always say, when I think of them, I don't think about wanting to see them as adults who are successful and all these different things. I think of them as wanting to see that process. I want to see all the milestones. I want to be there for all the significant experiences in their life, and not just the end result. So I needed to pull myself out of that. I needed to get myself out of that dark place, and I needed to take my medication, right? So that's what I did.
Now, also during the therapy, a lot of things happen to a woman. You lose your hair. I see you have some of the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You joked with me about experimenting with hair colors prior, so I could only imagine your hair obviously was a part of your, just your identity. Mm-hmm. Physically, as a woman, there are many changes as well with the mastectomy. Tell me about the acceptance and how you continue to remain positive and move on, fight on.
The bilateral mastectomy was a big decision for me. I consulted with different doctors to make the decision, and I was advised to do that bilateral mastectomy. I was asked if I'd be interested in doing instance reconstruction. I always had the mindset that I would not do surgery to change anything about my body, to make it look more appealing in any way. Right? That's just something I had instilled in me. But when I thought about it, I imagined my daughters seeing me mm-hmm. flat-chested and with these scars across my chest. And to me, that's a sign of strength for all those women who have that and who live with that. But I was thinking about how it would impact them as well,
okay.
and seeing me like that. And I made the decision to do the instant reconstruction. And even then, it's my chest is scarred. There's absolutely no breast tissue there, so I have no feeling or sensation in my chest. You could throw hot water on me right now in that area, and I would not know. So, I mean, you could imagine being 30 years old.
I was not going to say that you're a 30-year-old woman. You obviously and have gone into menopause because of the treatment. You now have your entire physical body has been changed. Mm-hmm. It's changing on you.
Yeah, and When I step out my shower, there's a mirror there, and it reached a point I didn't want to be in that bathroom because I don't want to look at myself. That's how it was initially. I'm still not particularly pleased with how I look. And it's not about being vain. It's about self-esteem
yeah.
and feeling as though
you have to be comfortable in what you feel, and I tell people that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The hair and witnessing the hair just falling. I know a lot of women, they attach themselves to their hair. And obviously, when you joked with me earlier and said, you know, you experimented with hair colors, what was that first chemo like, or the second chemo when your hair started to fall?
All right. So I like doing a lot of stuff with my hair before, braids, cutting it, coloring it. When it started to fall, again, I made up my mind to accept that process, but it was very surprising to wake up every morning and see all this hair on your pillow, and also embarrassing that you have to go and like shake out the pillow and remove it. So to me, it was actually a relief when it was time to remove my hair. My youngest daughter, she started to clip it, and then my husband, he shaved it.
You shared a story with me with your younger daughter, because obviously one was a little older, 9, mm-hmm. and the other one was about 3 years old. When they started seeing the physical changes, one of your daughter didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
Can you share that story with the audience?
Yeah, so it was Amaya, my daughter, who was 3 at the time. And she clipped some of my hair the day that I knew it had to shave. She clipped it and then she left for preschool. And by the time she got back home, my head was shaved. So she looked at me and she said, "Mommy, you look ugly." And I could see how heartbroken my older daughter was by the statement, and it stung for me. And I was like, "Really, you think so?" And she said, "For my birthday party, my friends would think my mommy is ugly, and I don't want my friends to laugh at me." And I told her, "Okay, I understand that. That's how she felt." And I spoke to her, I said, "But do you think mommy is an ugly person? Like the way I treat you and the time we spend together, is it not enjoyable?" And she wasn't happy at that time, and it didn't seem as though she wanted to have a conversation. So I left her with her thoughts and her feelings for some time. And then she came to me and she told me she was sorry and she thinks I'm so beautiful. And if her friends don't think that, they don't need to come to her birthday party.
How did you feel when she said that?
I felt loved, which I usually feel by her. There's a picture with her comforting me in one of these images that's going across the screen. She's very affectionate, and I know that she was processing in her own way as well. She's 3 years old,
yeah.
You know, so she was processing as well.
And I think your story is one that we will continue to process. So we take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Crystal's journey to recovery and the impact, strain, or the strengthening that it had with the relationships around her. It Does Not Define Me. We're speaking with Crystal, a breast cancer warrior. Crystal, your cancer diagnosis at the age of 30. You know, some of the women that we've spoken with, they have, I don't know if they've lived a lot longer than you have. So they have tested their relationships around them, they've been tested. A cancer diagnosis tests your faith. It tests you as a person, but it also, it's emotionally, everyone is caught in this web of emotion. Mm-hmm. What impact did it have? You speak so much about your family, your parent, your mother, your stepfather, you mention your sisters, and also your husband. What impact has this all had?
So this is something I would also like to stress. Cancer does not only happen to the individual that's diagnosed. It happens to those that love and surround them. With me, there was a very big impact in my life. I think it brought my mother, my sisters, stepfather, and I even closer together. I don't know how that's possible. My father and I, we also built our relationship a lot. We started to communicate a lot more when I was sick because he was very concerned about me, obviously. Unfortunately, while I was trying to survive cancer, my marriage did not survive my cancer. So I'm currently in the process of a divorce, which was also very difficult for my daughters, obviously. So, yeah, so what
Take
I can
moment.
Say, yes, thank you. What I can say is just to be mindful that everyone is struggling and not just the person with the diagnosis. And
did you think that this would break your marriage?
No, definitely not. My husband and I met in university and that was it. We just blinked and it was 13 years later. And yeah.
You know, it as you mentioned, it's not just for the one individual and some, but you have to remain strong.
Yeah.
And you also have two girls. When I asked you about the driving force, you say it's those two girls. Now that you are facing the reality that a lot of things are changing and you still have not been declared cancer-free, is there ever a time that you feel angry? Is there ever a time that you feel robbed of something?
Surprisingly, no. I've never felt angry. I feel as though those around me probably felt anger for me on my behalf, but I've never felt angry. I felt very grateful, extremely grateful.
Explain
and I say that from
me.
A sincere place.
Explain that to me because I listen to your story as a 30-year-old mother. Your marriage is now ending because of the stresses of dealing with this medical journey. What are you grateful for?
I imagine there are people with this diagnosis that does not have the support that I have. I imagine that there are people, not within Trinidad, but throughout the world, who don't know where to get treatment when they get this diagnosis. I imagine there are people who are not educated enough to know what they're looking for to even be diagnosed. And they pass away and their family is uncertain what happened to them. So to me, I was able to identify that something was wrong with my body. I was able to have it diagnosed. I was able to treat it. And I was able to have so much support around me. Apart from my family, I have some friends that are amazing, amazing. And sometimes you need something different to your family. You know, we all have our family and we share so much with them. And then sometimes you need to step away from your family and just spend time with a friend who is really very important to you. And I have all those things. I am still employed. I was able to fight through and still work while doing chemo.
How difficult was that? And, you know, we spoke with one cancer survivor and she spoke about the loving environment. Another woman had to close her business because it was difficult. Working and going through this, was how difficult was that?
It was extremely difficult for me. Again, it was during COVID. So I was sick so many times because my immune system was weak because of the chemo. And at that time, I was terrified of driving. So if I didn't have transport for someone to take me to work because I needed them to help me with my girls, I would travel. I had COVID so many times. I got hand, foot, mouth disease, which adult even gets that. I was just always very sick and weak, and I was determined regardless of that because I love my job and I wanted to remain employed. I wanted to feel productive and useful despite being sick. Sometimes I would travel and I'd realize our population, they're not sensitized on breast cancer or on illness on the whole. They probably saw me as someone looking youthful and thought I just decided to shave my head because I heard some very rude comments sometimes while traveling.
Really? Like yeah. What?
So there was a taxi driver who hit his other friend saying, look at this one. That making any sense? Look what she do, she head. Right? And so many times during that period, people walked up to me and just outright asked, why you shave your head? But seriously, one time it was a compliment. A young lady told me that she saw this video with someone looking real good with their hair shaved and she wants to do it, but she's afraid it may not take her face. And I was like, oh. And
she's Did you ever feel the need to correct any of these people? Like, I sometimes feel the
need. Every single one.
Except, how did they feel?
Not the taxi driver. Okay. I didn't correct them because of the settings.
Right.
I said, you know what? I don't want to get into it with them. But everyone else who asked me, especially if they asked in a rude way, I said, I have cancer. And they looked so
embarrassed. Yeah.
They didn't know how to respond. And the purpose at that point wasn't that I wanted to make them feel bad. It's that I'm tired. Yeah. I'm tired and I'm doing my best right now. Why are you walking up to me and trying to shame me? This was me going to work. And I put on my work dress and I go with my bald head. Someone asked me, why aren't you wearing a wig for work?
Did you consider that? Because I noticed that you just didn't bother with that.
Yeah, I considered it. I went into a store one day and I looked at them and I realized that it's not me. Mm. This is how I am, you know, at this stage in my life. This is what I look like. And I guess everybody had to take it or leave it. You know, if you don't like it, look away. So I chose not to. But I completely understand and respect everyone who chooses to wear wigs. It's like me when I like to do my different hairstyles. They could use the opportunity to wear different wigs, you know, but I chose not to.
What do you want to say to you at 32? You still have not been declared cancer-free. You are awaiting your results, and we are joining you in prayer because we know this is going to come out negative for you. You also are now currently separating from your husband. You have two young daughters. Your whole family dynamic has changed. How has this, you know, I ask about people, their lifestyle changes and their life on a whole. How has this changed you?
In a lot of small ways that adds up, I suppose. A short while ago, I mentioned my fear of driving. When my marriage ended, I left everything, the house. All I wanted was the girls. And I got a little apartment, a two-bedroom apartment. I bought a little old car with the cash I had in my bank account. I said I wasn't going to try to take a loan or get anything fancy. I bought what I could afford and I started to drive. And when I go out, now before I was always very proper. Yeah. Now I go out and I dance. Everyone could be sitting and I dance. And if I look like the weird one in the room, that's fine. If my girls are with me, they dance with me. You know, if my friends are with me, they get up and we're in it together. I work as hard as I've always worked, but now I also work as though I'm proving a point that just because you're sick or you had a difficult time in your life, it doesn't make you incapable of accomplishing everything that you set your mind to. I had a delay. I was held back a little. But I'm still going to accomplish everything I plan to accomplish.
I want to pick up on that delay point because I know you also mentioned, we spoke about your personal relationships, but also you had professional goals. You were finishing your master's, right?
Yeah, I was doing my thesis. I already have the postgraduate diploma, so all I needed was the thesis to be completed to reach my master's. But I had to do a voluntary withdrawal from university. And so that's what I did. And, you know, now I need to reapply in order to finish that thesis. And of course, I have goals where I work, and a master's, of course, will help elevate me. But I'm staying on my path, and I will find a way, you know. But the thing is, now I have to reassess if I want a master's in that same course I was doing, because so much has changed or maybe it's just me, maybe I have changed.
You've grown.
Yeah, that now I need to do some self-evaluation and determine what I really want to do.
You are so positive, and you mentioned all the changes. In spite of everything you are facing, we still don't know whether you are cancer-free. What do you want to say to all the women out there? This is, we're raising awareness.
I would like to say, first of all, take care of your health. Check on yourself. Make sure you're okay, not just your physical health, but your mental health. Also remember that despite what you're going through, those around you are also experiencing your suffering. And so be kind to them. Also try to take care of them. It may not be what you're able to do every day, but they are important too. That's how I felt about my girls. They are important too, and we need to take care of them. Don't let go of your goals. Do not feel defeated. One of the jerseys I printed said, I have cancer is a sentence. It is not a sentence. It's not a death sentence, right? So stay positive, stay motivated, and listen to your doctors.
Crystal, thank you so much.
Of course.
We salute you. We thank you for sharing your story. I'm sure all of the women of Trinidad and Tobago truly do benefit from your strength and from your story of resilience. And I am certain we look forward to hearing when you give a call to the producers to tell us that you are cancer-free. This is our continued coverage of It Does Not Define Me. We are featuring conversations with cancer warriors, survivors, and with women who are doing extraordinary things to redefine their lives.
When you need the independence to speak your mind, you take it on the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5 FM.